This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
Ronnie Brown wanted to play baseball as much as football coming out of Cartersville, Georgia. He committed to Tennessee, then took his official visit to Auburn, and he found a community that reminded him of home. 5 years later, Brown was the second overall pick in the NFL draft to the Miami Dolphins. The current sideline reporter for the Auburn Sports Network now works with athletes, among others, to secure their financial future. The story of Ronnie Brown is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. Very glad today in our Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles to talk with Auburn great Ronnie Brown, former Tiger running back, played in the NFL, now the sideline reporter with us on the Auburn Sports Network. Ronnie, it's been a tumultuous last couple months with all the things that have happened. What has it been like for you and your family?
You know, it's been an adjustment period, you know, and I think that's a huge part of life. You know, I think trying to figure out how we make those adjustments, you know, and I think overcome adversity. You know, it's been a lot of that over the last few months, you know, a lot of unknowns, especially with the pandemic and the coronavirus and, you know, no one really knowing, throwing everyone's schedule off. And I think that's the thing that causes most of the problems because we're so routine oriented. And then when our day-to-day routines get thrown off, you know, it causes some of us to go in disarray. And so the biggest part about this is learning how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And so, you know, it's been, you know, I think it's been a great lesson for so many of us. And, you know, even for me, I try to look at perspectives and how we have our outlook, our own personal outlook on things. And so, you know, I feel like this has been, you know, an isolation period or insulation period. You know, I look at it as isolation versus insulation. And so this time has given me an opportunity to enjoy so much more family time, us to have more conversations. And so it's been great in that manner. Now, you know, all the results and coronavirus and people passing away and, you know, families being affected and the economy, all of those things, you know, those are negative. Those are bad, horrible in some cases. But, you know, I think from my own personal perspective, I'm trying to figure out how to find the positives in this and how to come out of this thing better than we came into it.
Ron, if you don't mind me asking, with all the things that have happened in the last week, with the racial tensions that are happening, what are your conversations with your family like now? What's a conversation with your son like now in this last week or so?
Oh man, that's been tough. You know, I think for people who really know me as a person, I grew up in Cartersville, Georgia, in Northwest Georgia, you know, and was fortunate to have met, you know, a white family that pretty much adopted me without legally adopting me. And so they've been such an intricate part, influential part of my life. They've been there in every aspect, whether it's, you know, everything that I celebrate, everything that I go through, they've been a part of it, whether it's senior night in high school. People who know me see that Ronnie has two sets of parents pretty much, you know, and so from senior night in high school to senior day at Auburn to NFL draft to all of these things, they've been a part of that. And, you know, rightfully so. You know, and looking at that, you know, it's weird. I'll send you a picture of, you know, one of our photos from Easter. And so, you know, it's my kids. And then, you know, it's a mix of families, you know, and so we're the only Black family in the picture. And so, you know, my outlook is a lot different because I've had so many, you know, influential people in my life that are opposite race. You know, my high school coaches, we still have great relationships. And so, you know, it's been tough because I'm here in Atlanta. My son goes to private school here. He's a part of the minority. But looking at TV one day during the week and him looking up and we were watching local TV and then it pops up with, you know, the police officer, you know, with his knee on George Floyd's neck. And so my son saw that. And so, you know, the conversation, well, why did he do this? You know, and so the way that we teach things in our home is just right and wrong. And so, you know, I had to explain to him that there are some bad people that do bad things. And unfortunately, you know, not everyone's going to like you because, and it may not be justly, but sometimes it may just be because of the color of your skin. And so for me, trying to have that conversation with him in the environment that we're in, one, I had to be careful because never would I ever want him to think that, you know, every white person is bad, or every police officer is bad, or, you know, every Black person is good, you know. And so in having that conversation and getting him to understand that, seeing that, and then he's seeing people here in Atlanta protesting and trying to explain why, because, you know, there's been so many of these instances where, you know, these people of color couldn't defend themselves and, you know, unjustly were murdered, or, you know, things happened to them. And not to say that it's fair, but, you know, and trying to have that conversation with a 7-year-old, you know, his response was, okay, I don't want to hear it anymore, because he just doesn't get it and it doesn't register. But, you know, I think even in the scope of things, having to explain to him, you know, you have to protect yourself. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, a lot of conversations, I'm on a group text with about 14 guys that we played together, Auburn. You know, I think people have to understand the nature and the scope of our conversations are just different as people of color. You know, when you talk about being pulled over, you know, the first thing that goes through my mind is, what do I need to do to get home and make sure that I get home to my responsibilities and my family? Not, you know, what did I do wrong? Or, you know, I already have a nervous feeling about it. And so, you know, I think it's just the conversations that, you know, come up. And I think in all of this, it's forcing some conversation, which I think is the most important part of relationship and growth. You know, without communication, you know, there's no opportunity for growth and understanding. And so, you know, and like you said, and having those, you know, conversations with my wife and my family and I, you know, it's been tough trying to explain it, but I think it's been necessary, and it forced us to have some of those conversations that we may not, you know, have, or we may just overlook as a family.
You mentioned Cartersville, and when we get together on game days, many times you'll talk about being from Cartersville and how proud you are to be from Cartersville. So talk about the influence that Cartersville, Georgia has had on Ronnie Brown, not only as a football player, but just as an individual.
You know, it's a huge part of who I am, you know, because I think the things that I was able to overcome as a kid and to get to where I am now in life, there are so many people that played a part in that. You know, like I mentioned, my godparents, everyone knows them. Everyone knows that, you know, who knows me and who really has a relationship with me understands that. But then, you know, just the community of Cartersville, you know, support I had, whether it was sports or just in general, you know, that was a part of my motivation because, you know, I felt that as I was going, all these people had vested interest and they wanted to see me do well. And so, you know, part of it, not to say that it was right, but part of me was like, I don't want to let these people down. And so, you know, as I've been able to, you know, go to each level, whether it's, you know, from Cartersville to Cartersville High School and to Auburn University and to the Miami Dolphins, I've always felt that I had some responsibility to, you know, positively represent my community. And so, and trying to shine a positive light on it. And so, you know, I just held that close to my heart. I always do. My parents still live there. My godparents still live there. You know, I wish I was more involved with the community, and that's something that I'm working on, but it's always and forever going to be a part of who I am because, you know, the values that I have, the character, the integrity of me as a person comes from, you know, the individuals that pour so much into me. And that went from, you know, coaches to teachers to, you know, just people in the community who supported me. And so the community is awesome and it continues to be the way. My son and I, you know, when we have an opportunity on some Friday nights, we'll go up to Cartersville and we'll watch a Friday night football game. And, you know, I want him to see it and he enjoys it. You know, I have a little cousin that plays football up there and, you know, my son just loves him. And, you know, he thinks it's so cool because he's like, Daddy wore the Cartersville jersey. He's a Purple Hurricane. And, you know, my cousin's Jaquelin. He's like, Quay wears the, you know, the Cartersville jersey. And so it's so cool. And I want him to understand that part of it because, you know, things have changed, you know, for our family in terms of dynamics and, you know, socioeconomically because, you know, growing up in a small community, now being here in Atlanta, I want him to understand that, you know, it took a lot for us to get here and appreciate, you know, the values that Auburn instilled. You know, I believe in work. I believe in hard work. And, you know, I think the Auburn Creed and all of those things, those are a part of me. And I want him to understand why it's important for him to go out and blaze his own path. You know, I tell him all the time, you don't have to be a football player because Daddy was a football player. And so, you know, I just want you to do in our family. The thing is, do your best at all times and always try. And so if you do that, I can be comfortable with the results.
Some folks may not realize that baseball was important to you just like football was in high school, right?
It was. I was a huge, I mean, Braves fan growing up. I didn't watch too much of the Falcons, you know, and so watching all of those teams, you know, I got a chance to meet Terry Pendleton last year. And, you know, I was so stoked because, you know, watching him growing up, my older brother was also a baseball player. And so he loved Terry Pendleton. He'd get down dirty and, you know, he'd get the ball over there. And so for me to get to meet him, I was ecstatic. And they gave me a jersey and it was pretty cool.
Ronnie, the recruiting for you, what did your decision come down to before you committed to Auburn?
You know, for me, it was one, I wanted to go play baseball, but that opportunity didn't really present itself in terms of, you know, the financial part of it. And so, you know, the better opportunity was through football, getting a full scholarship. And so knowing that I wanted to play college football, I wanted to play in the SEC. One, because I'm from Georgia. And so, you know, being here in the South, football is a huge part of it. And so Georgia and Tennessee and Auburn and Alabama and Florida. And, you know, so seeing all of those teams growing up, you know, I wanted to be a part of that because I just felt like that was the best conference. And so, you know, when it came down to my decision, I had an older cousin that played at Georgia, wanted to go to Georgia for a long period of time. And then, you know, as I kind of looked at it in the process, so many people from my high school went to Georgia. And so I wanted to do something different. And so I initially committed to Tennessee, you know, and I thought it was cool. Fulmer came in and, you know, they had won national championship before. And, you know, he was talking about that he had his ring on when he came in the living room. And then, you know, through playing baseball all summer, I was like, man, everyone was like, you got to do an official visit. And so for some reason or another, I chose to take an official visit to Auburn. And so Coach Tuberville and I, we met at a high school banquet here in Atlanta. I played against Ben Leard's brother in the state championship game my senior year. And so I met Ben after the game just on the field. He's just like, hey, man, great game. You know, I'm the quarterback for Auburn. And I just thought that was awesome for him, to come over and just say, great game, you know. And that was pretty much the gist of our conversation. And then he walked off. And so when I took my visit to Auburn, it was just something about the city, the community. My dad got a chance to really sit down and have a conversation with Coach Pat Dye. Tough for his loss, but he was a huge part of me choosing Auburn. You know, him and my dad talked fishing and hunting. And so my dad thought that was the coolest thing. And so we got back home, he was like, man, we got to talk hunting, you know, talking cabin and all of this stuff. But for me, it felt at home. Like Auburn felt like Cartersville's community. And so it felt like a family feeling. You know, and so for me, that was the deciding factor. And I called, you know, Coach Fulmer, those guys, and, you know, I changed my commitment and I ended up coming to Auburn.
Coach Joe Witt tells us that he wanted you to be a linebacker, not a tailback. Is there some truth to that?
100%. You know, coming in my freshman year, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to play, just recruiting. You know, Heath was playing running back, Heath Evans. And then I didn't know about Rudy coming in as well. And so Rudy came in and, you know, what he was able to do in that first year, in that one season in the SEC at Auburn, you know, it was tremendous. And I'm like, man, they got guys like this. I don't know if I'm ever going to get on the field. So, you know, through practice, Coach Witt, you know, he's old school. He grind me out. You know, I'm over there, the only running back, going through the linebacker drills, trying to give them a look. And then so a couple guys had gotten hurt. And then so he kind of, hey, Ronnie, you know, you be a pretty good linebacker. And then I'm like, yeah, I hear you, Coach. He's like, no, I think, you know, you can be a good running back, but you can be a great linebacker. And so, you know, a couple times in practice, you know, he tried to put me over there if we were doing scout team or some stuff. And, you know, luckily for me, it worked out. But, you know, every now and then I do wonder, like, what it would have looked like had I played linebacker. And I enjoy scoring the football. I enjoy playing running back, you know, every now and then. And we still have that conversation when I see Coach Witt now. He's like, man, you turn out to be a great running back, but I still say you would have been a better linebacker. So it's funny to have those conversations with him.
You were part of a time at Auburn. There's a picture that I saw on Twitter yesterday with you and Carnell and Brandon Jacobs and Trey Smith. You mentioned Rudy Johnson and Heath Evans. When was it during that time, Ronnie, that it dawned on you, you know what, I'm going to make this. I'm going to be able to flourish as a tailback at this university?
You know, I think it happened, what was it, my sophomore or junior year when Carnell went down, the Florida game. I was nervous about it. You see those guys that I had an opportunity to share the backfield with, like I said, Rudy Johnson my first year, He came in, led the SEC in rushing that year. Then the next year, Cadillac comes in, and I get to see like the talent that he was bringing. Then you got guys like Trey Smith, you know, that was, you know, a tremendous athlete, Mr. Florida. And so, you know, he was a talented guy, wasn't that big, but he had probably some of the best balance of an individual I've ever seen. And part of it's probably because his older brother is a professional snowboarder. But just looking at that, it was a constant positive competition between us. And so there was a respect level amongst the other guys. Brandon Jacobs comes in. He's 6'4", 260 pounds. I'm like, wow. Like, you know, he plays running back. And so, you know, it was always, I got to do my best. Like, I got to show up. I got to present my best self on a daily basis if I'm going to get an opportunity. And so that one season where, you know, Cadillac went down in Florida and I got the opportunity, I just felt like I had to maximize that time because, you know, guys were so talented and I'd seen so many individuals. And then, you know, when we first got to campus, it was my redshirt freshman year and Cadillac's freshman year. You know, we got a chance to meet William Andrews. We got a chance to meet Bo Jackson. I got a chance to, you know, see Joe Cribbs. And yeah. So being around all those guys and, you know, seeing those guys, I met Stephen Davis. And so looking at the legacy that they had left, you know, there was some responsibility there as well. Like, you know, these guys are considered great. Running back position at Auburn is respected. And so I got to try to uphold my end as a player. And so going into it, whether it's off season or, you know, during games or during practice, I had to be my best. And so, you know, luckily I got that opportunity and had a pretty good season that year. And, you know, it went from there. And I knew then I got an opportunity because it helped me prove to myself that I could do this. Without doing it, there was some hesitation and reservations there. But, you know, getting a chance to get in and perform, it reaffirmed that, okay, you can do this. And, you know, you're capable of being successful on this level.
Talk about the expectations of the 2003 season for you guys. And then what that turned into with regard to the 2004 undefeated SEC championship season.
Yeah, so 2003, it was a rough year. And I think that, I'll even say it now, that's probably the most talented team I've been on. We had Carlos Danby, we had some guys on defense, we had Dontari Thomas, we had so many guys, Spencer Johnson, that were great players. And so coming into it with those high expectations, unfortunately, we got off to a slow start, you know, and we were trying to figure out an offense. We didn't score a touchdown for 2 or 3 weeks. And so, you know, that was tough for us because we felt that we were a talented team, but we just wasn't putting it together. And so, you know, I think the experience of that season really weighed on a lot of us, even at the end of the year when it came down to a point where, you know, Carnell, myself, Carlos, Jason, we all had an opportunity to leave school. You know, I felt that there was some unfinished business. And I think we all shared that same sentiment in that fact. And so we made individual decisions, but collectively as a group, I think we all got a feeling what we were going to do in terms of deciding to come back. And, you know, I think we all felt that we had something to prove and to finish. And so for Jason and I, we were the same class. We came in, you know, in 2000 and, you know, he was my roommate. And so in looking at that, you know, I just felt like there's some things when you're so close to people, you can say it without saying it. I think we all had said it, but we didn't say it aloud. And so, you know, being in, you know, having that experience in 2003, it gave us the motivation into the offseason. And so the leadership, the reason that we came to Auburn was to change the program. And so, you know, on my official visit, I think all but maybe one or two of us signed on my official visit. And so, you know, we got in there and we held each other accountable. And it was a players team. We held each other accountable, whether we were at practice or whether we were out. Everyone was a leader. Everyone had a voice. And we felt that, you know, we were only as strong as our weakest link. And so even through that, we did Bible studies together. We did, you know, prayer meetings together. We talked about off the field things. And that was a huge part. When 2004, when we started that season, we came out as a link chain. And that was the reason that everyone, you know, locked arms, because we're only going to be as strong as our weakest link. And so, you know, that was our mentality for that whole season. And we were so confident because of the relationships that we had formed. There wasn't a game, I don't think, during the whole season that we felt like we were going to lose. No matter what the score was at halftime, we always felt that we were going to be victorious in that season.
I look back on that 2004 season, and to me, the game that was kind of the coming out party was Tennessee. You guys went to Tennessee. You were a decided underdog going into that game. And yet you guys dominated. I mean, by halftime, it was more of an Auburn crowd, it seemed, at Neyland Stadium than a Tennessee crowd. I mean, there's the famous play of you running over the player at the goal line, the famous picture. I mean, Jason came out on fire. The defense was strong that day. Junior Rosegreen with all those interceptions. So to me, that was the coming out party for you guys. Was that the coming out party in your mind, or was there another game where you guys really established yourself on a national stage?
I think that was the game that we exemplified what we felt as a football team. We felt that we were a good football team, but we were yet to put it out there and let everyone else see it in terms of the capabilities that we had as a team. And so we always felt that way. And I think that was a unique part of our team that year. We just felt so strongly about one another and about, you know, I think what we were going to put on the field. No one was really giving us a shot. It's like, yeah, you guys are the underdog. You're going on the road. You're going to Tennessee. You know, they have all these fans and all of this. And we heard so much about that the week of. You know, as the guys, we just went business as usual. We felt comfortable. We had a great week of practice in that game in the locker room. You know, everyone was excited. You know, it was a nervous energy, but it was more so we're ready to go. We felt really prepared for the moment. And so we got out there. You know, Junior Rosegreen had a great day. You know, our offense did a really good day. You know, and so all of those things, we put it together and let everyone else see that potential. I remember Charles Barkley being ecstatic about that game. And so, you know, it was great because we felt that, but to get a chance to, you know, I think we all feel that we have greatness. And when we get a chance to show people and people really appreciate it, it means a lot more, you know. And it was just us going to work and doing our business as usual, but getting a chance for people to see, like, this team is really a good football team.
When Sean Shivers scored the game-winning touchdown against Alabama this year and you're down on the sideline and you watch that helmet fly into the air, did it remind you of the play at the goal line in Knoxville?
It did. And it means so much. You know, me getting a chance to be, and I say getting an opportunity to be on the sideline, you know, it means a lot, you know, because I remember being in those seats. I remember being on that sideline. I remember being in those situations. And so, you know, for the smallest guy on the field in stature, but probably the biggest in heart, you know, he doesn't lack confidence. And so to see him do that and the response that, you know, that the stadium got, the crowd got, and the guys on the sideline, you know, it was an electric moment, you know, and you can feel it come through the sideline and, you know, go through the stadium because it's passion and it's, you know, motivation is in, and it's important to him. And so it was great, you know, and for me, being a bigger guy, I used to like the physical part of it. And so for it to come from a guy of his size, it was great to see. You know, it was great.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama.
I think what we see now with the college football playoff, a lot of that stems from what happened to Auburn in 2004. Here's an SEC champion, an undefeated champion, and yet it doesn't get an opportunity to play for a national championship. How did you guys deal with that?
You know, it was tough. It was disappointing because never would you think a team in this conference go undefeated and not get an opportunity to represent their school, their team, their university in a national championship game. And that was the unfortunate reality for us, you know, but at the same time, we all felt that there are only certain things that we can control. And so in life, you know, I think there's so many lessons you can learn from the context of sport. And the biggest lesson in that was control the controllables. We couldn't control the outcome. We weren't selected to be in the national championship. We ended up having to play in the Sugar Bowl, you know, which was a great opportunity. We enjoyed it. New Orleans was really hospitable. We enjoyed our time down there. But, you know, I think looking back on it, I think we played a huge role in, you know, going forward in the playoff system. If that ever happens, you know, I doubt that will ever happen where a team goes undefeated in the SEC and not get a chance to be a playoff team. You know, there's some reward in that, you know, but at the same time, you know, we felt really comfortable as a team that year. And we were looking forward to getting another shot at USC because their previous tries weren't successful. And we just felt like that was the team that we had. We had the build, we had the makeup, we had the heart, we had the unity, we had everything that it takes to be a great football team, and we had the talent. And so we were excited about it. So you could kind of feel the air go out of everybody knowing that, you know, we weren't getting that shot again, because we were really chomping at the bit to get to USC. And it just honestly, between me, it had become personal. Like, I wanted to play those guys.
You and Carnell both had terrific seasons in 2004, and the draft is now coming up. When did you start to have an idea how high you were going to end up in that draft that season, Ronnie?
I think I had a conversation with my then agent. We all went, Carnell, Carlos, and I, we all went and trained in Arizona. I was intentional about it because I didn't want to be too close to home here in Georgia. I didn't want any distractions, and I wanted it to be a business trip. And I knew that I wanted to perform at the combine because I didn't have anything to lose. And so in doing all those things, you know, my agent had let me know that we had gotten an invitation to attend the draft. And I was nervous about that. I was like, no way do I want to go there. Like, I mean, I'm like, I'm the second guy, really. You know, Carnell was really the starter. And so getting that invitation, I was like, I'm kind of nervous about that. You know, I didn't really look at myself as one of those, you know, highly touted guys. You know, when you look at getting exposure around, you know, college football, I think Carnell was up for the Heisman that season. And so, you know, I was just nervous about that individually. And so he talked with me into going. We ended up going. And so in getting that invitation, I thought that there was a great opportunity that I'd be drafted, you know, in the first round. Never did I know the second pick. And even on draft day, I didn't know that.
If you didn't know it was coming, what was it like for you?
It was surreal. And even now, you know, it's emotional because never did I think a little kid from Cartersville, Georgia, you know, given the circumstances, overcoming, you know, a lot of the obstacles, did I think I myself and my family would be in New York for an NFL draft. I just wanted to get an opportunity to play in the NFL. And so to have that experience, it was so many emotions. It still doesn't register that you were the second pick in the NFL draft. You know, and I'm truly blessed to have that experience, you know, very appreciative. But, you know, I just, you know, people are like, what does it feel? I don't know. I felt numb. Like when it happened, everything just kind of happened. I remember walking across the stage, but, you know, it's somewhat of a blur. And I remember up until the point where, you know, Alex Smith had been drafted, and then I'm looking at Braylon Edwards' table, assuming that he's going to be the second pick. And then my agent taps me and he's like, hey, the Dolphins are on the phone. And I'm telling him, like, don't joke. Like, this isn't a time to be joking. And it was really, you know, the Dolphins coaching staff, a name that, you know, not many people around Auburn really care about, but Saban was on the other line, and, you know, they gave a little kid from Cartersville, Georgia a shot. It was a blessing come true.
What was the biggest adjustment for you going from the college game to the professional game for you?
For me, it was the responsibility. You know, I'm a small town kid. I'm not really, I don't need a lot of attention, you know, going to Auburn and then being in a city like Miami. There was so many things and moving parts to, you know, doing that. The expectations of being, you know, a second pick, the expectations of being, you know, an NFL player, the expectations for me being a small town kid and, you know, representing for a community, the expectations of carrying the weight of, okay, you were drafted this high as a running back, you need to have an impact. The financial expectations for family, the expectation in society of what it means to be a professional player. You need to have, you know, certain things if you're a professional player. And so, you know, all of those emotions and trying to carry that weight, you know, on your shoulders without really, for me, having a mentor and somebody to kind of give me an idea of what I was getting into and trying to really, you know, channel all those emotions on and off the field to be successful, you know, while being in the eye of the public, you know, it was a little tough and difficult. So I tried to align myself, you know, just watching individuals who I thought were successful in that space. And I was fortunate we had some, you know, great veteran players that helped me a lot. But at the end of the day, it was, you know, the responsibility of doing all those things and trying to not make too many mistakes and try to be as good as I could be as a player. And so it was a lot, but it was a great opportunity. It was a great experience, you know, to be in Miami, to be involved in the community, to, you know, be chasing a dream that I had grown up thinking that it was a chance, but I wasn't sure. And for all those things to come to fruition, like, it was just, I mean, it was just amazing. And so, you know, while it was a lot, it was a big responsibility, at the same time, it was a tremendous honor for me to have that experience.
Who did you look up to? Who are some of those veteran players that you look to for an example?
Coming in, man, I was fortunate. I had Junior Seau, Zach Thomas, Jason Taylor, and then we had a guy, Bunny Holiday. And so those four guys, they really kind of took me under their wing. And a lot of it wasn't so much verbal. It was just the way that they carried themselves, the way that they did the work. I don't think I've ever seen anyone prepare the way that Zach Thomas did for the game and take the craft seriously. Jason Taylor being an awesome player, Hall of Fame player, but then how involved he was in the community, the thing that he did and the effect and the change that he had on the people in the community, that meant a lot. Junior Seau was probably the most personable person that I know. You know, he called everyone buddy, and he was just always had him in a positive attitude, his perspective on life, you know, and I think those things, you know, came off to me. Bonnie was like a big brother. He would have some of those conversations with me. He's like, hey, RB, come on, you know, and he challenged me, you know, as a player and as a person. And so having those guys was a tremendous help for my career. And, you know, even me to this day, like the person that I am, I get a chance to sit on Jason Taylor's board for his charity. Bonnie Holiday lives, you know, not too far from me here in Atlanta, still having conversations with him. And so, you know, really just looking at Junior's perspective on life, you know, I look at a lot of things like I don't have to do them. I get a chance to do them. And so, you know, just looking at that and being grateful and gracious for opportunities, you know, like I said, for a little kid coming from a small town who got a chance to experience some of this stuff.
How important in your career was that Wildcat position for you?
It played a huge part, and yeah. I didn't know that it would have the effect that it did or that it has. You know, it was just an opportunity. Like I said, our guys in the locker room, you know, in our running back room, we had a really good relationship, you know, from Lusaka Polite to Ricky Williams to Patrick Cobbs to, you know, to Lex Hilliard. We had a really great room. And so even with our coach, you know, Coach Saxon, James Saxon, we had a great relationship, and I think that's what made it go. And so when Coach Lee came in from Arkansas and he was telling us about the formation, you know, we were excited about it. One, because it gave all of us an opportunity at some point to touch the field at the same time. And that rarely happens. And so we took pride in that part of it. Like for Ricky, myself, Patrick Koff, Lusaka to be on the field at the same time. Like it's four running backs, you know, represent on the offense at one time. And so, you know, we just took pride in that. We had success with it as a group. You know, we were excited about it. And, you know, even to this day, I have a poster of, you know, that group, you know, with my coach. And I take pride in that because it was the pride that we had as a group, you know, and not many people like to hear it. But, you know, one of the things Saban instilled was how you do anything is how you do everything. And so he always summed it up with a story of, you know, if you're going to be a street sweeper, take pride in what you do and put a sign in your yard and say, the world's best street sweeper lives here. And so, you know, I try to take that approach in everything that I do. And, you know, it has definitely been a huge part of who I am as a player. And, you know, even to this day, everyone still talks about the Wildcat.
When and where did you meet your wife, Ronnie?
Taylor, she's from LaGrange, and we met at Auburn University. I met her first day on campus, I think. It was Camp War Eagle, one of my earlier roommates. He was in a fraternity, and he knew this young lady, and we had like a barbecue, and she came over with her. She was just kind of showing around campus, and we met, we had a little conversation, and then, you know, from then on during the school year, we see each other and, you know, courting, I was chasing her. And yesterday was our anniversary. We've been married for 9 years and we've been together since 2002.
Congratulations. Ronnie, talk about what you're doing now. This is not just a job for you, but this is a bit of a mission.
You know, like I said, growing up in Cartersville, you know, in humble beginnings, I didn't have a lot of financial means. And so, you know, as I made that transition from college to professional, you know, it was a big change for me and the responsibility change. And, you know, not just, you know, in society, but also within my family and that responsibility. And so with that happening, it was just a lot of things that I realized that I just didn't know. And I wanted to know that information. And so, you know, I was fortunate enough to surround myself with some individuals who, you know, assisted in that process. There was a lot of business guys that I met while I was in South Florida. And, you know, we ended up opening Community Bank, but that was the catalyst to me wanting to know business and how things happen on the other side of sports. Because in the business of sports, you know, in 2007, I tore my ACL. And so that was, you know, a harsh reality that this may not last forever. And so, you know, as I went on that journey, I started to see, as I got older in the locker room, a lot of younger guys come in and share that same experience. They just didn't know. And a lot of guys as athletes don't know what you don't know. You know, and all the successes that I've had, you know, I'll be the first to tell you there were so many people that played a part in that. And so, you know, my goal, my charge, my objective, the challenge to myself was, you know, from this point, I want to figure out how I can help people. And so, you know, for me, the biggest thing was the responsibility with finances and trying to figure that out. And so I wanted to see how I could help people. And I realized through financial means, by helping people help people, that's what you get an opportunity to do. And so for me, you know, I've changed and transitioned into financial as a financial professional because that's my goal. I feel like there's so many people who sacrifice so much, whether it's through business or through, you know, their body, through sport, to get to a certain level of success financially. And sometimes, unfortunately, to encounter the wrong people or just not have the financial literacy to really maximize that opportunity. And so, you know, I feel that it's important to be able to work with people who really care about what you care about. And so that's another blessing that I feel, you know, when I transitioned out to get registered and licensed as a financial professional. And now my challenge is to go out and try to help as many people as I can in this journey of, you know, finance and really having someone that they can trust and, you know that it's going to work just as hard for them as they have to, you know, secure their financial or their finances. And so I'm blessed, I'm fortunate to be able to be in this space.
How many athletes, maybe current and former athletes, are you working with right now, Ronnie? Guys that have been, you've been in their shoes before.
And it's across, you know, a few different sports. We got a golfer that we work with. We have a baseball guy. We have football guys, of course, you know, that being my background. And so it's probably, I don't want to give the exact number, but it's probably between 15, 20 guys. And, you know, it's a tremendous opportunity because I feel like it's my obligation to share those stories with those individuals on, you know, just the business of sports, but then also the importance of making great decisions in your 20s that are going to have an effect on how you live the rest of your life. And, you know, I've realized that there's so many similarities with people in business as well, because you spend so much time trying to build up a business or reach a level of success, or, you know, executives or different people with wealth, things start to fall through the wayside, whether it's, you know, the updating of beneficiaries or having a succession plan for these things. And, you know, talking about, you know, what's next with your business, you know, and having these goals and objectives. So, you know, it's great. I get a chance to still continue to learn. And that's a great part of it as well. But then I get to meet a lot of really cool people and, you know, hear their stories about how they've accumulated their wealth. And, you know, for me, the biggest thing is, what's your why? Like, what drives you as a person? And, you know, what's, you know, been the motivating factor for you to get to where you are?
When our network crew is together to elicit a laugh, all that we ever have to say is, everybody got Google. Talk about that story, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I think that pertains to Carnell and I.
Right.
Everyone wants to know who's faster.
Right.
And so I think at Auburn, I think Carnell was good to be pushing 210 pounds, and I was more so 235 pounds, sometimes more, if you ask Coach Yoxel. You know, I think that was a story we were talking about, you know, who was the fastest. And so we were looking at combine times, and I'm like, everyone got Google. Like, everyone can look it up. That's something that we can find. If you're really looking for that information, the internet is undefeated with keeping information and providing information. So you can go find it.
It is one of the all-time classic stories. We tell it all the time. Ronnie, I have a final thought for you here. I mean, you went to Auburn. You're an Auburn graduate. You're part of our crew broadcasting Auburn football games now. You met your wife at Auburn. So we kind of have an idea of what Auburn has meant to you. But I want you, in your words, to talk about what Auburn University has meant to Ronnie Brown and your family.
It's been a lot, you know, and I say that I didn't know the impact that Auburn would have on me when I left Cartersville, Georgia. You know, looking at the opportunity to play football, do something I love to do by getting a great education, you know, that was a huge part of it. And so while I was there, it was a huge accomplishment because I knew I wanted to get my degree. And so to get that from the university, but then as I left and transitioned, you know, throughout my professional career, I just realized more and more what effect and the impact that Auburn had on me as an individual. One, you know, now looking back, my wife and I, we met at Auburn. My kids are all Auburn all the time. But just me as a young man, it's instilled so many values, whether it was Coach Witt, you know, and the way that you presented yourself, all the individuals that I got a chance to meet, the relationships that I got to form, you know, some of my best friends, like I said, it's 14 of us, you know, who all played at Auburn on a group text. We still have conversation constantly. You know, my best friends that I talk to now, Jason Campbell, who was my roommate, who's also the godfather of, you know, my son. So it's just the relationships, the impact, and the opportunity that it provided. You know, the football thing was great, and it provided me a great opportunity, but even to transition into life and catapult myself into the profession I'm doing now and the value of people and the people I got to encounter and the relationships I continue to meet and build, you know, being a part of the radio crew with you guys, you know, the passion that you guys share for, you know, Auburn and us getting to sit around, whether it's a dinner before the night before the game and just talk about what Auburn means to us, you know, and getting a different perspective. But I think at the end of the day, the impact is the same. And so, you know, it's done so much. And, you know, I think words make it challenging because, you know, you talk about as a person, you know, something that had such a tremendous impact on you, it's hard to really describe it. And it's a huge part of, you know, why I'm successful in life, in sport. And so I guess that's a huge part of why it's important for me to give back, because I just feel like Auburn University has given me so much, from, you know, opportunities to, you know, friendships, to relationships, to, you know, all of these things. It's been great. And I just feel, you know, I feel that there's a part of me that I owe Auburn something because I got all of this from Auburn. And so, you know, it's a goal to make sure that when I can, if I can participate in something, that I'm there to support.
It's a pleasure to call you a colleague, Ronnie. Thank you very much for your time today. We wish you all the best and look forward to being back at Jordan-Hare Stadium again, where we can sit down and to have some more of these stories. Thank you very much today, buddy. War Eagle.
Thank you. I appreciate it. War Eagle.
On the next Talking Tigers podcast, Nosa Egwi came to Auburn from Texas. He started in both of Auburn's national championship games, a victory and a title against Oregon, and a heartbreaking loss to Florida State 3 years later. Recently, he gave a TED Talk on the disease of low expectations. He says he suffers from this disease. Nosa continues to inspire today. The story of Nosa Egwi is next. For Ronnie Brown and the Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Be safe and be well. War Eagle.